Youth Radio talks food, what we eat, how we eat, and the way life revolves around food. We talked to a teacher about the history of salt, some traveling vegans about their project, horror stories about food, and more. So stay tuned here as Youth Radio goes edible.
My name's Nakia, and I'm good at making mashed potatoes, like from scratch and stuff.
My name is Kedrick, and I can make some mean cereal.
My name is Sinead, and I can make eggs.
My name is Aaron, and I make good cupcakes.
My name is Walker, and I have perfected a Spanish rice recipe over the years.
My name is Adam, and I make really good ramen with a little bit of sriracha sauce in it. It's good stuff, for sure. It's vegetables, you know, protein, so chicken sometimes. It really spices it up, and it's not ramen anymore. It's something else. Truly magical.
My name is Eric, and I'm really good at making just basically stir-fry type stuff, just frying up some tofu and potatoes and things and eating it with a corn chip. Many corn chips.
I'm Jackson, and I like to think I'm pretty good at making pierogies.
I'm Benji, and I'm good at making things with lots of chili and hot sauce and salsa and eggs in it, but usually only I find it delicious because I really like copious amounts of chili and hot sauce and eggs.
I'm Ben, and I can mess up a microwave pretty hardcore and with all kinds of stuff in the microwave.
This is Youth Radio, and this is When Food Attacks, Horror Stories About Food, just in time for October.
One time I was at a friend's house, and she was cooking some eggs for me. Like, she just didn't cook them long enough for it to not be raw, and then I still ate it anyway. And I know this was kind of soupy, but sometimes it just sort of happens. When I left, I got, like, really bad food poisoning, and I was like, what'd you do to me? Like, feel horrible. No, I didn't say that, but I was just like, oh man, I feel bad. And she said that the natural remedy for food poisoning is drinking pickle juice. And I drank some pickle juice and I felt amazing.
I was drinking chocolate milk at the school and it tasted like coffee. And I was really excited about that because I thought that that was awesome. And I was like, oh my God, this is just really good. And it wasn't. Chocolate milk is not supposed to taste like coffee at all. And I got sick, and I didn't throw up or nothing, but I like felt horrible, and I felt like somebody like punched me in the stomach, and like just horrible things. It was like insides were like and tied up and stuff. It was really gross, and it happened within like 30 minutes of drinking that.
A friend and me were exploring, got into a new place. We were all excited. We went out for food, and I cannot remember what we ate, which is scary because now that I'm looking back, I got so sick that I can't remember much of anything from this whole experience because I got food poisoning and I had a flu at the same time. Like, I got sick with the flu as I was, you know, feeling like I was going to throw up from the food poisoning. So I go out the next day, not really realizing how sick I am. And then all of a sudden I have to go home. So I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, I think I'm going to be sick. You need to come and get me so I can come home and lay down. And as we get home, I can't even make it to my room. And I just crash on the couch for like 2 days. And I'm delusional. I'm having crazy dreams. I think my parents are screaming at one another. But no, it's just me being really sensitive to any sort of sound. And that's really my only memories, me being delusional and having crazy dreams about being on top of a roof and yelling at people too. And so then like 2 days later, I go to sleep, still feeling terrible. I wake up the next day and I feel wonderful. Still got a little bit of a stuffy nose from the flu. But I'm just like, and it's just one of those feelings where I'm just like, you have such a bad memory of what happened. I just woke up and I was like, what happened to me these past 2 days? I didn't eat any food and I just felt terrible. So then I went out and ate a bunch of food and then I felt wonderful.
So I'm bad at drinking water, and I had a friend who's also bad at drinking water, and this is many years ago. And so we had this, like, I had a water bottle, and they were like, oh, I got this water bottle now to, like, even just trying to be better at drinking water. So I was like, oh, let's have a drinking contest, see who can finish our water first, who can finish, you know, and like, and it was meant to be like a motivation, like, oh, we'll finish this, and then we'll fill the water bottle up again, and we'll have, you know, you can't have too much water, or so I thought. So we're like, all right, go. And then I'm just chugging this water, and something must have happened that, like, pushed some sort of air bubble in while I was drinking really fast. So I immediately, like, just had this sharp pain, like, straight down my throat and just, like, lodged in, like, my chest. And I was just like, oh, my God. I was just, like, keeled over. And they thought I was kidding. They were like, oh, come on. Because they thought I was, like, letting them win or something. They were like, come on. Like, and I was like, I swear. And just this excruciating pain. And I like had to get, I was like walking around trying to figure out, like, there was nothing I can do. And so I was really freaked out and worried that I was going to have like a food aversion to water, you know, and be like, well, now I can't ever drink water because now I'm afraid of this air bubble thing. I had to go lay down. It took me a good hour of just like laying down until this like weird thing passed.
So I have a really weird like medical history. I was on what you would call a specific carbohydrate diet, which is essentially nothing with carbohydrates in it. So that's pretty much everything. So, like, I couldn't have most vegetables, most fruits, most nuts, most beans, no corn, grains, no soy, no grains at all. No dairy. Just, yeah, I survived on a select few nuts, a select few fruits, and a select few vegetables, and that was about it. And I was raised vegetarian at the time, and finally the doctor says, look, you gotta eat meat, otherwise you're just gonna be incredibly malnourished. So, fun fact, the bottom of your foot is one of the most absorbent places, like, on your skin. And one time, in my kitchen, someone spilled milk, and I walked over the milk with bare feet. And for, like, the next week, my throat was closing up. I was having massive seizures and fits of delirium and all kinds of nasty stuff just because I stepped in some milk. Before we knew, I was so affected by, especially wheat. To this day, I can't have wheat, and I'll never be able to have wheat. But before we knew, I was so sensitive. I was in Hawaii, and I had this weird craving for bread, and I ate, like, like a loaf or two loaves of bread that they were giving away for free at this hotel or whatever. So I ate a bunch of bread. And then, like, I was up the rest of the night, like, hallucinating and screaming and, like, attacking my family. Like, I attacked my parents and my sister and, like, attacked everyone. And all I remember is, like, feeling like I was surrounded by, like, these silhouettes. I don't really remember anything else, though.
Can you please first state your name and then what product we're dealing with?
My name is Owen. We are dealing with Mountain Dew Voltage.
Can you describe the can for us?
The can has a bunch of cartoon lightning bolts along what looks like clouds that are all moving in one uniform direction and curve. It's blue. The mountain in Mountain Dew has been changed from green to blue.
What was your first thoughts when you first picked up the can?
Well, actually, when it was to drink it, my first thoughts were, I wonder if this tastes like getting electrocuted. Like, I've already had this mindset of what lightning would taste like if you were to eat it. You know, like people eat fire. This would be, I pictured how it would be if you ate lightning, and it's not at all how that sounds. When I first drank it, I thought it would taste like that, but apparently it is dew charged with raspberry citrus flavor and ginseng. Ginseng? I don't know. With other natural flavors. I really don't know what that entails. I can't spot anything remotely natural sounding that much in here. The ingredients include like carbonated water. That's the number one ingredient. So the biggest thing they have in here is carbonated water. And then it's high fructose corn syrup. I've never really gotten that because basically anything of high fructose corn syrup has never tasted like corn. Corn doesn't even taste remotely like high fructose corn syrup. So then again, I don't know what fructose is. This one, they just say natural flavor. That's it. Like, literally, I'd like to see a box. It just says natural flavor. Just put that in there. There we go. It's healthy now.
You've taken a sip, so now can you describe the taste for us?
I will. It does taste more like citrusy and stuff than it does actual lightning. For those who have eaten lightning, it probably doesn't taste like that. Correct me if I'm wrong. I have not yet. It's on my to-do list. Yeah, it sort of tastes like they basically anything blue they could find, any sort of blue fruit. They're like, well, it's got fruit in it, and it's blue, so it's lightning now. And that's what they put in there. Yes?
How much soda would you say you drank, Owen?
I drink roughly 2 to 3 of these, like, cans a week.
Do you think soda makes you go crazy? Like, with energy? Like, makes you buzz around?
No, it doesn't. What I do is I'm able to, in order to perk myself up, I literally just pretend I've got energy for everyone. I got to sleep at, like, 11:30 this morning. Got up at, like, 7-ish. 11:30 at the earliest. I got in bed at 11:30. When it comes to actually sleeping, I probably got much later than that. And then I just pretended I have this. So literally, this just gives me enough energy to where I'm not, like, in debt of energy, which I'm sure I am. Somewhere out there, God's, like, you know, ticked at me. It's like, you took all my energy. Probably my favorite in here is that actually right here on the thing, it says charged with raspberry citrus flavor and ginseng. And ginseng is literally the last taste ingredient. It's third to last above blue and blue coloring and red coloring. Like, literally, those are the only things that are less in there than actual ginseng, which is right here on the thing. So I don't know why they, it's like, why even bother?
What do you venture lightning tasting like?
It mostly tastes like, you know, really, like, you know that feeling carbonation gets on your tongue where it's like really spiky kind of? It would be like that, like a lot of that, but mixed with a little bit of like, just a little bit of this blue-ish flavor it's got, and some sort of smokiness to it. But this is just way overdoing the blue.
And if you could get into some kind of fusion cooking, what would be the one thing you'd like to mix lightning with?
What I would like to mix lightning with would be probably ice cream, because it would just be awesome to be like, hey, you want to try some lightning ice cream? And they'd be like, sure. Is that like a code name for something? And be like, no, it's not.
My name is Jenny Haynes, and I'm with Farm Animal Rights Movement. We're a nonprofit organization based out of D.C., and this is a project called the 10 Billion Lives Tour. We've been traveling across the country to colleges, universities, street fairs, music festivals, raising awareness about the treatment of animals in our food system in the United States. Every year, 10 billion animals are raised and killed for food, and that's a statistic according to the USDA. And these animals are forced to live miserable conditions. They're denied everything that's natural to them, and so that's what inspired this project.
What personally got you involved in the project?
I have been doing this kind of work for several years now. And it was just seeing videos like this, seeing footage like this, seeing what happens to animals in our food system and being exposed to their horrendous reality that got me active, and I just knew I needed to do something.
How did the bus tour come about?
It was thought up by a person, one of my coworkers, birthed from the idea of, you know, how can we reach the most amount of people with this information? What would be like an effective tool that could help us, you know, that could go on the road? And so that's how the truck was born. The organization I work for now, Farm, was looking for someone to do it, and I had already been traveling with another nonprofit organization doing this kind of activism. And so that's how I personally got involved with this project.
Cool. And how's it been on the road?
It's been awesome. We get to see a lot of places, we get to meet students and people all across the country, and reach them with this really, really important message of animal suffering and showing people what we can do about it. So, I mean, life on the road, of course, has its ups and downs. There's definitely some sacrifices made, but there's also a lot to be gained, and just the connections formed are incredible.
I've been with this truck for maybe almost a month now, but before this I did other animal rights work traveling the country. But being on the road, it has like pros and cons, you know, like you definitely miss being at home, things like that. But also, like, I get to meet hundreds of new people every day and get to talk to them about veganism, which is major because a lot of these people have never heard about anything like this before, and you get to have all sorts of interesting conversations with like a variety of different people.
What have your kind of eating habits been like on the road and compared to obviously being at home?
Mm-hmm. It's definitely more simple foods. I don't eat as exciting of a diet, but we have a rice cooker and a blender on board, so, you know, make some grains, and we're able to, you know, get creative with the rice cooker and drink smoothies. We have cereal with almond milk and oatmeal, fruit.
Ideally, we'd be able to go to restaurants all the time, but that's not always the case, being as we're both like really strict vegans. So we eat a lot of raw foods, we eat a lot of fruits and vegetables. I've been on like a Clif Bar binge for the last 3 days. I've almost eaten every single different kind of like flavor that they have. It's been exceptional.
How has the response been from folks? Are you able to gauge that?
Yeah, the response has been incredible. People are very moved when they see what happens to animals in our food system. Most people don't know what goes on in terms of the treatment of animals in our food system, and most people are horrified. And there's a lot of secrecy surrounding these practices, and that's very deliberate. If this stuff were publicly known, if it were publicly known how animals are raised and killed as standard practices, most people wouldn't want to eat these products. So the way we gauge the reaction, there's a one survey question at the end of the video too that asks people to pledge to eat more animal-free meals and how many days a week they're willing to do that. And 84% of people pledge to reduce their consumption of animal products. And we send out a follow-up survey 1 month later, and over 60% of people say that they stick to their pledges. So we are, to that extent, we are able to gauge the effectiveness, and it has been incredibly effective.
Who sponsors this trip, and like, who are you guys paid for your work in this tour, like, or is it voluntary?
Jenny is paid. I get a like small stipend every week, and they pay for all of my food that I consume, but they give me enough money to live. She is a more solid employee of the organization. I'm just kind of like here helping out.
And what organization is that?
Farm Animal Rights Movement.
It really brightened my understanding of what happens to these kind of animals and how it's not right at all. I always knew they were treated cruelly, but I didn't really know they were treated that bad. I mean, about turkeys getting their beaks cut off and pigs getting their tails cut off and upside down, it's crazy. I mean, that shouldn't happen to any kind of animal or any person for that matter. I mean, a person shouldn't get treated like that, so therefore an animal should not get treated like that.
You ate meat before this?
Oh, yes, of course. I eat a lot, actually. I mean, it's just in part of my daily meals, so now it's changed a lot. So,
what do you think about this method of delivering this message to you, just kind of walking by?
I think it sends out a big message, especially to all the kids on campus that are eating these kind of things when they go in food courts or out to eat on Saturday nights, or, you know, it could completely change their mindset of how they pick their meal on a menu when they go out to eat, whether it'd be something vegetarian-like or just something basic that you could eat that's organic or whatever. I think it's a big impact on these students around here.
I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school, my household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel, barbecue tofu, no fish, no candy bars. I'm in Delhi to stay healthy, and I rarely drink water out the tap cause it's filthy. Lentil soup is mental fruit, and ginger root is good for the youth. Fresh vegetable with them Italian stew. Sweet yam fries with the green callaloo. Careful how you season and prepare your foods, cause you don't wanna lose vitamins and minerals, and that's the jewel.
This is Nakaya, and I'm going to talk to a teacher at South about the history of salt.
Well, salt, I'm like most people, it's really critical to us. It's we don't realize how much salt's a part of our life. So I stumbled across a book by a guy named Mark Kalansky, which was Salt, A World History. And instead of looking at the history of the world as organized around military, organized around monarchies, organized around gold, he looked at the world and the history of civilizations as being organized around the need for salt, which gives a whole different view to why society's organized. We think it's to make things better. We think it's to protect us from things evil. But Kurlansky's original work was the one thing we all need beyond gold, beyond romance, beyond shelter, is we can't live without salt. And so, therefore, he looks at civilizations of the world as always being a quest to satisfy that need. It kind of changed the way that I look at history. It's just a really unique way that here's something that we've organized around that we've completely forgotten. But you have words, even in our society today, salary is based on salt. You used to get paid in salt because salt had value because you need it to live, whereas gold has value if someone thinks it's gold. So salary is a word based on salt. Soldier is a word that has a salt root to it. Just salivate, that we envy something and we salivate. All these words that we have in our language are based on a concept that we forgot. So it really kind of piqued my interest. And instead of getting my master's in education, I decided I wanted to get my master's in history because I suddenly understood there were different ways to look at history. And since then, you know, I've looked at histories of how the world is organized around diseases, or how diseases have organized the world, how the need for horses have organized prairie societies, how the need for safety has organized us into cities, you know, a collective safety. And I find that I can understand the world a lot better, and I think I can actually explain the world a little bit better as a teacher by knowing that we're not just here based on economics. We're here based on providing the most essential needs, and that what we think isn't important because now we're awash in salt. I mean, it's everywhere. I've been to Great Salt Lake and the Bonneville Salt Plant several times, and you just literally have 100 miles of salt, and it's hard for us to understand that just 150 years ago, you had to work to get salt. That's why we're worth our salt.
See what it is, and then out loud say what it is.
Okay.
All ready? On the count of three, after everyone
sees it. We're going to say what it is, not what we think.
No, not what you think just yet. So first we'll say that.
Pizza!
Pizza. Sauce.
Yum.
Turtles.
I ate 2 pieces of pizza last night.
Cheese.
I like it.
Incubate.
Orange.
Depends on the pizza place. But sometimes I think of, like, adventure. And other times, like do some stuff after I eat pizza. Like, I could, like, skateboard or something. But other times I feel, like, really, like, fat after I eat pizza. And I just feel, like, really greasy. Like, my skin feels different. Sometimes I just feel like eating anything else, but it's, like, the less greasy. And then, like, the really rich kind is, like, actually fills me up.
Pizza is doughy and cheesy and chewy and fun to smell when they're making it. And my sister used to always make homemade pizza, and she used to chop up all the vegetables, and they would have lots of good vegetable aroma and stuff.
For me, eating pizza is kind of like comparable in experience to being in a really dark room surrounded by like a bunch of people like that you don't know that smell very strongly of like a very kind of neutral scent that isn't like good or bad, and kind of like feeling safe and uncomfortable at the same time.
I feel like for me, while I'm eating pizza, I feel like I get a sense of comfort and a sense of not family exactly, but it is kind of a group thing, because you usually share a pizza. You feel like I'm a part of something, you know?
I'm eating pizza. I always feel like I am the pizza, like I'm in the oven and I feel greasy, and sometimes it can be uncomfortable.
When I'm eating pizza, I feel like really takes me back to things like road trips and stuff, because, I don't know, it's road food. You can eat it whenever and wherever, and it'll always be pizza.
I usually feel really guilty after eating pizza just because it's so bad for you. But I sometimes when you haven't eaten it in a while and it really feels like a treat, there's not much better than getting pizza and then eat, like watching a movie and eating a delicious pizza. It's like the most comfortable food experience I can imagine.
Peanut butter and jelly sandwich.
Mustard.
Rhinos.
Jelly.
Cats.
Jelly and peanut butter sandwich.
Chocolate.
Honey.
Salmon.
Youth.
Reminds me of my mom and my dad. And when I cut it, like, down the middle, it kind of feels like jail. And then when I cut it diagonally, it feels like kind of homey. But then if I just eat it how it is, then it just feels like school, like packed PB&J. And it's pretty tasty, but no one ever has jelly sandwiches. They just have peanut butter sandwiches. So jelly is sort of like the younger brother, the peanut butter, or like it needs it to go along, but it's still good by himself, just not as good as it would be with his brother that's bigger than him.
I like to eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with milk, because bread and milk it just has this combination that I can't even describe. It's beautiful.
It's kind of like someone giving you a bunch of painkillers and then sewing your mouth shut and then like putting like sweet gelatinous like substance like in your mouth and having you taste it, but you can't quite breathe and because everything's all clogged up. And yeah, I think I have a morbid association with food.
Because as I get older, it's lazy food, because it's something I can make really fast if I'm bored. But it does kind of remind me more of my childhood. And I remember, for some reason, eating peanut butter and jelly at John Sheeran's house next door. They cut it at an angle, so it was like, you know, the triangles. And I thought that's what made it taste better, because it always tasted so much. The peanut butter jelly tasted so much better at the neighbor's house. And I was always like, oh, it's because they cut it. And I would come home and be like, Mom, we've been doing it all wrong. You know, like, we got to cut this thing at an angle. And then I think I realized as I got older that, like,
the neighbors definitely were maybe a little more well off, and I think they just bought better bread, better peanut butter, and better jelly, because we always had the, you know, the coupon stuff and just whatever was cheapest. So I think that had a little bit more to do with it than not.
It's kind of like putting cats and dogs together, because jelly just doesn't want to spread. And then whenever I take a bite into it, it's like an animal fight in my mouth.
I don't think peanut butter and jelly sandwiches are as special now as they once were. Maybe it's because what Eric was saying about feels kind of like lazy food. Well, for one thing, I'll never eat peanut butter and jelly together anymore. I only eat peanut butter sandwiches for some reason. Yeah, I don't know what it is. It's like I can't replicate the peanut butter and jelly sandwiches of my youth. And so I just like I've moved on. I've moved on to other kind of sandwiches, I guess. But there'll be times when it's more appropriate than others. But it's definitely more associated with comfort and convenience than with some sort of like aesthetic food thing. It doesn't satisfy my hunger.
Well, yeah, I think that's like my favorite food of all time. Well, that and cereal. And I feel like if they made a peanut butter and jelly cereal, everybody in America would gain like 20 pounds automatically. And that is my view on peanut butter and jelly.
Food, Midwest.
Butter and salt and corn.
A buttery corn.
Getting it stuck in your teeth.
Sweat.
Summertime.
It's like kind of painful in a lot of ways. Probably because like I had braces for a while, so I wasn't supposed to. But I did anyway, and it kind of hurt a lot.
Corn on the cob reminds me of the 4th of July. Because we didn't eat it that often, I guess I would always eat it from one end to the other instead of, like, eating it in rows. I would always eat it just around. But then at the end, you're like, oh, yeah, you got it all. And then you realize it's all stuck in your teeth. And then you have to have a toothpick. And you feel like a real cowboy.
I remember, for some reason, always associating it with ripping teeth out. I don't know why. And there's kind of these weird, like, gold, and, like, the tops of it, they were kind of like orbs, but then they kind of went down to, like, a kernel shape, but the tops are orbs, and you could, like, pop those with your tongue, and all, like, the corn juice or whatever would come out. I don't know.
I feel like I have a love-hate relationship with corn on the cob, because I don't... It's one of those things, I go into it thinking I'm not gonna like it. Like, I don't want corn on the cob, but then it's like at a barbecue or something, and it just put on my plate, and then it's, you know, it's slippery, but then you take that bite and it's just this like burst of flavor, and then I'm just like, man, sometimes there's not much better than that experience of just eating fresh corn on the cob.
I never really liked eating corn on the cob, because when I was young, I was told that corn on the cob, you don't really digest it. And so whenever I eat corn on the cob, I never like felt like I was actually eating food.
It's a good food. I really like it, but not the end. At the end, when it's all stuck in your teeth, and you go to the bathroom, and you get the toothpicks, and you just sit there for like an hour trying to get all of it out. And then when you think you got it all out, you walk out, and there's still some there. This always happens to me. Like the flavor, hate the cob.
Really depends on how it's cooked. Can be really bad if it's been cooked for slightly too long and it's all starchy and weird and gross. I always seem to associate it with memories of family reunions and really awkward stuff like that. What do I do? Better eat corn.
I think corn on the cob is maybe my favorite vegetable. I just really enjoy eating it, and it has a lot of positive memories associated with it. Yeah, it seems to just represent something more than what it is, but I think it's mostly for me, that is just a real taste thing. I really enjoy the whole process of eating it. It's really fun. You have to kind of work for it like that. But mostly, I really like how it tastes.
For me, I never, you know, really liked any type of corn, because like when I was younger, I used to stay like summers with my dad, and he used to, My stepmom used to have us eat corn, and I never really liked corn because for some reason I never used to chew it all the way. So when I used to eat it, it kind of felt like a little needle poking me in the back of the throat. So I've never really liked any type of corn. So when I saw corn on the cob, I just figured if I touched it, I was going to get poked in the finger. So I didn't eat corn on the cob till I was like 12. So yeah, I dislike all types of corn, cob or otherwise.
Chocolate.
Brown.
Milk.
Benjamin.
My addiction.
I love chocolate.
Quarters.
Cacao bean.
I like to put it in the freezer for a bit, like a chocolate bar, and then it snaps off in the piece, and it's just got that snap, and then it melts in your mouth slowly, and it's like, it's like you're in a pool of chocolatey meltness, and it's great.
I'm what you'd call a hardcore chocolate addict person. So I don't know how much money I've wasted on like 90% cocoa chocolate bars and just like pounding them into my mouth. I don't know if I could tell you what chocolate tastes like since it's more of an inhaling process. It makes me think of like eating the earth, eating something really pure.
I have my system down. You know, it definitely has to be hard. I might not put it in the freezer, but it's weird that the system doesn't work if it starts a little melted, even though the process involves biting it into small pieces in my mouth, smushing it on the roof of my mouth till it all kind of melts together, and then it's just basically melted chocolate in my mouth that I'll kind of like hold in there for a while, just kind of be able to like get that flavor in as much as possible.
Okay, first off, I have to say chocolate is amazing. Whenever I'm eating chocolate, I'm like a cat. I feel satisfied after my meal and want to take a nap.
Looking back on it, at the age of 6 to 8, I love chocolate. That's all I ate. You could call me an obese child because I was a bit fatter. But now, it's just not the same. The feeling I had when I was younger, completely different. Now it's just like, it's there. Might as well eat it.
Yeah, I myself have spent loads of money on Mazarus 96% cocoa bars or whatever. It's a comfort food. I eat it with stuff like tea and just chill out. I guess I describe the experience as something very smooth, very strongly flavored, makes you kind of feel warm after.
When I'm getting ready to eat chocolate, like I get this physical sensation in my mouth. I don't know if you guys have ever experienced this, where it's like something is like turning on, like anticipating. It's not just like, salivating or whatever, but it's like this weird tingle in my mouth. And sometimes it just feels like my mouth is broken for a second, but then the experience is always so pleasant and comforting. But it also feels like a drug, like it has a really specific purpose, and that once you start, it's really hard to stop eating it, like if you have a whole candy bar and you're trying to save some for later.
Chocolate is good, but too much chocolate kind of makes me sick. I haven't ate chocolate in a while, actually. I think last time I ate chocolate was at Golden Corral. It was me and like the rest of the Banneker, and they had the chocolate fountain because this was like the first week they had the chocolate fountain. Everybody was all excited. So me and like four other people decided to dip French fries in the chocolate fountain. It was delicious. But you know, it was dark chocolate, so like half of everybody was like,
Just be quiet. So this is
I'm Nakaya, and I'm going to talk to my grandma and my great aunt about their lives and food and habits, considering that they have been alive and around through three generations of my family. So yes, for the record, again, who are you guys to me?
Grandmother.
Her name is Mary Lee. And who are you?
Great aunt.
That's my great aunt. Her name is Sue. Actually, her name is Janice, but whatever. I was told that you guys worked on a farm for a little bit. And I was wondering what that was like.
We grew all of our own stuff. We had gardens. We grew hay, corn to feed the animals that we had. We had chickens, cows, pigs. We even had a lamb, horses. We had lambs one time.
I rode the pig once, but I wouldn't ride it again. But I rode horses. I'd climb on the fence and the fence post and get on this big old horse and away I go.
What were some things that you guys did on the farm?
Help feed the chickens with Mom. Help gather eggs with Mom. I got to shell corn. I could feed the cows. Tried to milk cows until they stepped on my toes. That didn't work out too well, especially when I got kicked.
I, for one, I've never milked a cow before, so I have no idea what it is like. Would you like to tell some of us?
Well, you just
pull it.
Just pull it and squeeze and pull and squeeze.
How did milk taste, like, since it was
sweeter? It doesn't have a processed taste to it. Butter's creamier because it's handmade. I don't like commercial buttermilk, but I love buttermilk where you make the butter. I'll drink it.
Yeah.
Whole pitcher full.
What other things did you do on the farm?
I learned to... Mom didn't really teach me how to cook, which I wish she had it because I know some of her recipes now. But... I've not been able to get them down pat and taste like her.
Because she never measured. It was a pinch of this, a pinch of that, my palm full of something. Is that a teaspoon? Is that a tablespoon?
You guys also, everything was fresh from the garden, you said.
Yeah.
How did that taste from today, like the foods that we get today? How does that differ?
Tastes fresh.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean? I've never.
It's crisper and fresh, and it didn't have the wilting chemical whatever they put on it now to make it last, make the stuff last.
Preservatives.
It didn't have any of that stuff on it. But it was just fresh stuff. Oh yeah, we can it.
We had
4-H and stuff.
Vegetable soup. Everything.
How do you can things without it being all moldy?
Put it down in a pressure cooker and have a pressure cooker, and then set them out until the top pops, then seal it up.
Would you ever have to miss days of school to work on the farm?
No. Mom and Dad insisted that we go to school. I mean, that was above priority.
Also, I was wondering, you've told me along, I've heard about this animal named Bullet.
Bullet was my baby. I had raised him from the time he was born.
What was Bullet?
A little
Angus calf.
Angus cow.
Calf.
And they decided to kill it one day. And I had raised it on a bottle with a bucket with a nipple, and that's how I fed him. And they decided to kill him one day. I would not eat anything concerning a cow. I just wouldn't for about 2 years. And I was anemic and I was supposed to eat the red meat. Nope.
And how did your mom feel? How did your mom feel about this when you weren't eating?
Well, she didn't like it because I wasn't eating. But she kept talking to me about I should understand that they'd have to have the meat to eat on, but I still could not eat the meat.
How did this differ from when you ate other animals compared to Bullet? I mean, because you said you grew everything on there and you ate chicken and fried chicken, even though, you know.
Yeah, the fried chickens and stuff I could eat. They were all right. I mean, it didn't bother me to eat them. The chickens I was glad to kill anyway.
Yeah, I hated. I get chased by roosters.
The rooster. We had one rooster that the minute we opened the gate, why, he'd know it. And he'd come after us. Spurs, I mean. And I'd take my baton, and I waylaid him a time or two. He just went rolling. And I ran right quick and got the eggs and ran back to the house. And
we have fried chicken next day for dinner.
Yeah. See, that he was a mean thing. He was mean.
My grandmother has obviously had kids, or I wouldn't be alive. But
no, you were hatched.
Thanks, Grandma. What did you feed your kids, and like, how has that changed since like you've been taking care of like your kids, and then me, and then my then your grandkids?
It's a lot easier to go to the store and get it than it is to grow it.
Yeah, but they.
But it didn't taste as good.
As far as the milk is concerned, all of us kids were breastfed.
Did you breastfeed your kids, Grandma?
No, I couldn't, because I had taken anesthetic. So you don't breastfeed when you do that.
I guess I was not either. I mean, compared to like what you fed my mom when she was a kid, how's that changed since like Avery, my niece?
Well, could buy baby food now. Back then you had to make it.
And Mom Grandma would just mash up green beans or carrots, and she just cooked them real soft. Take a fork and mash them up, and season them a little bit, and that's what they were fed.
I see what you guys eat usually. It's a lot of chips and bagged things, not a lot of homegrown things anymore. How has your own eating habits changed over the years?
We just don't have it. We don't have a place where we can
grow it or
get
anything.
Us a garden or anything like that, and we just don't have a place where we can grow it. We either don't have the stuff
or don't have the time. We just don't have the time to cook from scratch anymore.
What is your day usually? Why are your days so time consumed? I understand.
Because I'm taking care of my great-grandkids.
Yes. It is very awesome that you guys like have enough time to even do what you do, considering that you are senior citizens, no offense, taking care of, like, toddlers. It's very, that must be very hard on you, and especially, like, taking care of.
Keeps us jumping. Keeps us young. It does. We have to outthink the generation now.
Yeah, if anything would happen to my babies, I would just. I'd probably just sit here and die.
And did
disintegrate? Sorry.
Yeah.
Just sit there and vegetate, be a better word.
Has some of your eating habits changed, considering that you have to take care of kids?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
We don't eat. They eat. We make sure that they eat.
They eat, and a lot of it is
meats they won't eat. They love hot dogs. They will eat hamburger.
Mm-hmm.
Those ham steaks, they will eat that. They'll eat chicken nuggets and stuff that way, and French fries. And they like more French fries but they like mashed potatoes, buttered potatoes, however way you want to fix them. They'll eat vegetables, especially broccoli and cauliflower, Brussels sprouts. They love those. Things like that.
How do you think that their diets will change considering their generation as they grow up and how, like, the community is?
They'll eat more fast foods, I think.
How do you guys feel about that, considering that you guys grew up on a farm?
Well, under the circumstances, there's no farms.
Mm-mm.
they're selling the farm that to take
if
care
they're
for
gonna
houses.
Get any vegetables, that's about the only way they're gonna get it.
Yeah.
I'm gonna be around my vegetables. I'm gonna chop down my vegetables.
Sue, how old are you?
I'm 74.
Grandma, how old are you?
That is not a question to ask at 66.
All right, I was just asking. You could have said no.
Big brown bag of them home. I jump up and down and hope you toss me a carrot. I'm gonna keep well my vegetables, cart off and sell.
Youth Radio is brought to you through a partnership between WFHB, Rhino's All Ages Club, Harmony Education Center, and the Bloomington Parks and Recreation Department.
Youth Radio is produced by Bloomington Teenagers and broadcasts live every Saturday night from 6 to 10 p.m. right here on WFHB.
Rhino's youth programs are free and open to ages 13 to 18. If you want to participate in Youth Radio, join us Thursdays at 4 p.m. at Rhino's All Ages Club, 331 South Walnut. For more information, call 333-3430. Yeah.